And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Okay, it's Trump report. Trump, 2 hours of Trump, maybe some more Trump. All right, Dr. Frank wants to start us off with a clip goo. Is it going?
So, a slugfest, but Donald Trump is the sole survivor on the GOP presidential candidate island. So, now onto Trump's next big test. Can he rally the Republican Party to get behind him?
I want to be a part of that unifying process so that we're at full strength this fall so that we can win this election. We cannot afford to lose this election to Hillary Clinton.
He's the nominee of the Republican Party or the presumptive nominee via the voters. I respect that and accept it. But that's not going to change the reservations I have about his campaign.
Got more votes than anybody else. And we respect the voices of the Republican primary voters across the country.
I said I would support the nominee of the party. I am.
This election is too important to go into an election at half strength. That means we need a real unification of our party.
Idaho Congressman Raul Labrador says he will vote for Donald Trump, but in a sort of an unusual twist, he says Trump has not yet earned his endorsement. So what does Trump have to do to get the party to unify around him?
We go. I don't know. What do they have to do? He has to meet with Kissinger.
Yeah, I was just, you know, that's a whole area. And, you know, I wish this is the one time, really. Well, I'm always glad to see Keith, but I have some things about Keith,
to
bring
up.
Keith,
where are you at, boy?
Where are you at, Keith? But, no, this is, I talk about the theme each week in this story, you know, the next chapter of the Trump saga. And, you know, it's been a little slow compared to where it was. I mean, after he, you know, clinched it, essentially, I mean, not officially yet, because Jeb Bush is still alive, as you like to say. Jeb's still there. But, no, for this... The last week was, or 2 weeks ago, it was about the establishment and the media coming to terms. Their mouth was still aghast, just completely open. Shock and awe of the establishment and the media that Trump was the guy. I mean, it was fascinating to watch. I mean, they were on the news, and these people were in a daze watching them try to interview people that were Trump supporters.
You know, the one thing that keeps coming up, Trump has gotten more votes in the Republican primary nominating process by Republicans than anybody ever else ever.
That they've recorded. Yeah, absolutely. He's brought more new voters out. So this was the week or so before. Now, this week,
just doesn't matter.
This week, it's been about the consolidation of the establishment with the so-called Trump movement. Because, again, this is not Trump the candidate. What they are trying to figure out, and what I think the establishment is understanding, is that it's not Trump the candidate. It's Trump the movement. It's the silent majority, and they don't know how to get around this. They keep trying to basically Trump him, of all people. They keep trying to find leverage on Trump, and they keep missing the target on that.
Doesn't matter if they hit the target. People just don't freaking care.
They don't. I know. They're shunning. They're basically shunning the Republican Party. And what was left was Paul Ryan, which is why they had that meeting. Trump showed up with Reince Priebus being the referee, but with Paul Ryan basically saying the ultimate pissing contest, which is who is going to kiss my ring, who's going to battle Al farther, which we talked last time about the Japanese. That's what that whole issue was at the beginning of last week when we talked last. This whole week has been the sizing up of who basically will flinch in this game of chicken. And it seems that the establishment has, at least to some degree. We will see really where his VP pick is. Trump is doing a lot now. I think he's smart. He's trying to get more leverage up front by saying, look, I don't want hassles from the establishment, and I don't want you picking the VP candidate. So Trump has an interesting team picking the VP.
Wait. The Republican Party's trying to pick the VP? Well, or they always do?
They always do. I mean, that's what they did with Reagan. Oh, we don't know this officially, but this is the pressure probably Trump has, which is, all right, you know, this is what this whole thing with Paul Ryan is most likely about. It was two areas. One was the VP pick. The other was about fundraising monies. This was an issue because when Trump gets money for the Republican Party, if he brings in money, the question is who should get that money? See, normally the presidential nominee and all the senators and representatives all share in the kitty of the money that the RNC raises. You with me? So they usually they compile the money, but it's kind of like the abortion issue. You know, if you're a state that stay for states' rights, if you don't want abortion, you don't want money taken from your state to be paying for abortion in other states. I mean, which is why now it's all national, gets around that problem. Same thing with naturopathic medicine. You know, people don't want, and I agree, your tax money to be pulled from one state to pay to reimburse patients to see naturopaths in states that you don't believe in natural medicine, or at least your state doesn't. So the same thing here, you know, the establishment doesn't want RNC money going to fund Trump. So
now that gazillionaire people that own the Republican Party don't want Trump, period. That's what's going on.
Well, yeah, but this is just another roadblock. They're saying, well, you know, how
you're
do we
not going to get
money?
Our money, Mr. 10 right. billionaire,
right.
if you do.
If you
going,
don't kiss the
excuse
ring.
Me, you're confusing me with someone that gives a crap.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you don't kiss the ring, then you're not going to be able to get some of this money. And Trump is just spinning it around on them, right? So, and Trump's argument is, well, you're not going to get that much money unless, you know, I'm on this ticket and I do what I want. So I think that was the one area that they had to negotiate. The other is the VP pick. So, you know, who will be the VP pick? Does the establishment have any say here? Over and over, we've said on this program, he better not pick an establishment person. He does want someone who's an insider, or at least someone who understands Washington. But if he picks an establishment type, then you have all the overtones of what the Bushes did to Reagan, forced, good old George on the ticket, and the ownership of the establishment back again. And, you know, Trump has a target on his back, because all you need to do is...
Literally!
Literally, if the president goes, the VP establishment walks right back in. So that is why it's going to be a little tricky to find someone. But the RNC wants their fingerprints all over that pick. Trump has picked some good people for his vetting process. He's picked, of course, Ben Carson, which I think probably is more for just name and stability reasons. He also picked the lawyer that helped John McCain, of all people. He picked John McCain's old campaign lawyer who helped vet and pick Sarah Palin. So now we have that gentleman and someone else, I think at least three people in this VP vetting criteria, the selection committee. Now, it sounds like there's some names being thrown around. Chris Christie was a big name, no pun intended, but I don't think he's going anywhere. I think, matter of fact, the voters of New Jersey came out and said that they themselves don't want him as vice president for whatever the reason, whether they don't trust him or they just love Chris Christie.
How did they say that? Just poll?
It was a poll. It came out a couple of days ago where Chris Christie, New Jersey, they don't even want him as VP. So I think Christie's pretty much out for a number of reasons. Newt Gingrich is a name that's really been kind of kicked around on all the kind of the conservative shows, whether it's Sean Hannity, the Fox shows. You know, Newt was a strong supporter of Trump during this process. He's quite articulate. He doesn't have larger ambitions. And that's because those days are done, right? He's sort of out to pasture, and he knows Washington.
His daughter is not in the running?
Well, whose daughter? Trump's daughter? No, he's not going to pick his daughter. Come on.
Why not?
Because she's got
to
run.
Hillary wants to pick Bill.
She has to run the empire. I mean, someone
has
to run the empire.
Hillary wants to pick Bill.
And Trump's daughter is articulate. She's a female. Remember, this, after all, Trump hates women, as we're all told.
She's going to run for president later.
Yeah, yeah. And she'll be a good face, really, the public face, while his son Eric is the political face for the Trump interaction with the company.
I am looking forward to Trump picking, hopefully, somebody for his own reasons, that has his own criteria, that has, you know, great credentials of what he wants to do and remain Trump and not have anything to do with they, them, those. Anything. Anything.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
On this show, we discussed this in the first few weeks that Trump was got into the race, that even the Republicans were underestimating him. And so look, both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump were heavily underestimated by the media this cycle. Sanders came very close to winning the Democratic nomination, got very little press coverage, was never taken very seriously on our side. So yeah, I think it's been very hard to cover this election. I think there's, as you pointed out, people haven't been reporting from the ground. The country's changing. There's something in the air this cycle that the national media has been very slow to catch up to.
Do you know who that was talking? Was that Barnes or something?
No, it was one of the commentators on MSNBC. I actually forget. He wears glasses and I forget his name. He's one of those that's still in mourning. He was in shock. He couldn't, you know, didn't expect this coming at all. So
morning shock. What? Hillary didn't, or that Trump got it, or
that Trump got it. I mean, they, in their mind, you know, they honestly believed, I guess they, in their mind, they could not see how this is possible because they've disconnected themselves from the people and the Democrats as well, for that matter, which is why they don't understand how the Democrats, you know, popped up for this Bernie Sanders, and many of them supporting Trump. They just, that's the problem. Unfortunately, we've talked about flyover country, you know, the middle part of America, and that's been flyover for the politicians as well. And that base, that silent majority, is what finally woke up. And it shows the arrogance and ignorance of the media. They, all of them, they couldn't see this coming. Now, you know, I don't want to rehash the issue of predicting it.
But they've always been of the mind that they could alter, change, influence, be in control of it. And they weren't this time.
Well, it's not that they weren't this time. I think they just thought they were in control all of this time, and they really weren't. Mm-hmm. They didn't realize that they weren't. I mean, many of the elites, they did change because, you know, Charles Goyette, I think, said it, or was it you? I forget who said the quote. You know, there's those that want to be left alone and those that won't leave you alone. That's your quote, right? So which one are you? And the problem I find with
Charles says it in the rejoinder, though.
Exactly. So you know, my one concern or issue with libertarians, and I love libertarians. Heck, I'm a libertarian now, officially. I've come back to the party. I've come home, guys. But my issue has been, you know, I'm a second generation libertarian, you know, in essence. And I'm much more pragmatic, I guess, because I've lived through this for so long. I'm frustrated. I understand the system's broken and it's really changing the culture over a win. I get all that. We don't have to have that debate again. But I understand the concept. But still, you know, this country is shifting and it's changing. But the average, but the people who get involved in politics tend to be more liberal-minded. So if you're someone who likes to be a busybody and tell everyone else how to live,
go to politics
and you get to sit on a committee and some kind of a task force, and they just love doing Robert's Rules of Order, and they get off on this thing telling us how to live our life, and they don't see it as a problem. A top-down approach is fine. I'm on a board right now, what I'm having fights with, because, you know, in their point of view, they don't want to be accountable. I ask them, let's pass a bylaw so that everybody who passes a vote, when we vote on a measure, that our votes are recorded for transparency. You know, and they didn't want to do that.
Hell.
I mean, everything I bring up, it's funny how I have people on this board who've been there a long time. They're like the establishment. And their response to things is, oh, well, I understand about this transparency thing. And it's really important. Transparency is really important. I know a lot of you feel it's really strong. And I do, too. But there's always a but, right? I'm for transparency, but the minute you talk here, but with transparency, it's like being almost pregnant, right? And this is the problem with the establishment. These are the people that are the busybodies. The libertarians and many just independents, conservatives, leave me alone-ists, as you would say, these are the people maybe in flyover country or places like New York and California where we just don't get involved. We, you know, unfortunately, by not being involved, we've allowed others to do so for us. And that has gone on for way too long. And by voting in the establishment each time, because each election cycle, the establishment on both parties tell you, do not vote your conscience. Do not vote third party. Do not vote for you know, Ross Perot. Do not vote for Ralph Nader, because it's a wasted vote. And every election they say, this election is the most important election. Last election, we told you it was important, but that one didn't count. This election is the most important. And here's a couple of clothespins that you can put on your nose, and you need to do what's right, do your duty. And therefore, we have spent a generations enabling. And that's what this is. And I quote Dr. Phil, the genius Dr. Phil McGraw, who says, if you want to change bad behavior, you never, never reinforce it. All right. That's called child rearing. And that is what we have done by reinforcing bad behavior of the Republican Party and the Democrat Party.
And the change is going to be what?
The change, the first part of the change is people basically realizing how broken the system is, where their voice doesn't matter. You have known, this audience has known that for a while. But the first problem, like in natural medicine, is the underlying problem. But the first issue is knowing that you have a problem. If you don't think you have a problem, I see patients all the time. They walk in thinking they're fine. We look at their labs and they have diabetes or they have whatever problem. You have to know underlying issue. Most Americans did not understand how broken it was.
You know, this is when you start to see the alteration. Last night we're at the discussion group, and there were a couple of representatives from Americans for Prosperity there. So you had, you know, Tom, you know, the head guy here in Arizona, and he knows the boys, and it Cato. I mean, you know, it's a Cato thing. And, I mean, not Cato, well, it's Coke thing, which is Cato thing, which is a whatever thing. It's Coke brother kind of, you know, stuff.
Oh, last night he was a Coke brother guy? So that's where he got his money?
What, Tom?
Yeah.
He started off at Cato in Washington and became director, communication director, gotcha, or whatever for Goldwater.
I didn't know his background. It was a great
talk.
Went
on Americans for Prosperity and so on. Oh, no, that's Nick. I'm talking about Tom. It doesn't matter. There's Nick was also at Goldwater Institute, one of the attorneys in the Constitution or whatever. And these guys are just hired guns. And they actually literally, you know, Tom would wear a little square AstroTurf around his, you know, on a chain saying, yep, I'm the AstroTurf. You need a crowd? He was marketing. He goes, yeah, you want a crowd here? You need to get the conservative, you need a database? You call me, man. That's what I do. And sure enough, he lands the gig. You know, he's the boy. And they had another young man there that probably in his late 20s, early 30s, that was sitting at the end of the table where you were at. Mm-hmm. That guy is a new guy doing, you know, marketing and fundraising is really what he's doing. Well, during, you know, the round, you get to make your comments about whatever the speaker and you ask questions or whatever. Everybody gets to go through. It's like, I don't know, 25, 30 guys. They try and keep it under 30. And this one guy, brand new, he gets up and he went off on how it's all about social public opinion, you know, the opinion, that's where the real battle is going. I'm going, he must be listening to the show. Yeah. So this is, you can see as time goes on, these younger guys that are coming in to take over these think tanks, to take over this activist stuff, to take over, they are coming in with the understanding that this isn't just about how many delegates you get and you get Washington in the machine of whatever. Mm-hmm. that is just a side effect that may be delayed side effect, but it is a side effect of the people just freaking, my opinion is, and my opinion is represented in where I spend my money. My opinion is who I put bumper sticker on the car of kind of night vote and whatever the heck. And what you'll start to see is once the establishment finally goes, okay, it's okay to put a Trump bumper sticker on and still be invited to, you know, the best Republican Party parties. Mm-hmm. You see? So it's just a public opinion. And I am just so sick of them, they, them, those, having such a large hand in that. So it's nice to see the people rising up.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It's the notion of the Speaker of the House withholding his support for the nominee of his party, the presumptive nominee. Is that a big deal or not?
Well, so Indiana was 2 days ago, and the call for party unity is perfunctory, but it's premature. Primaries are always emotional, and this one is particularly emotional because mainstream Republicans, regular Republicans, and certainly conservative Republicans are very angry at the party. So my analysis is that Paul Ryan is speaking to conservatives and saying, look, we understand that you're not about a party or a person, you're about principles. And he would like to hear from Donald Trump, as many of us would like to, particularly we who have re-registered as libertarians, more about his policy prescriptions. I don't think he has to undo anything. He has to flesh out some principles that comport with why people have supported the Republican Party in the past.
Mary, when did you re-register as libertarian, and where do you stand on voting for Trump or not?
This is Mary Madeline.
I'm a never Hillary, and I'm a provisional Trump. Because I like his attitude, I like his strategic chutzpah, I like that he had the gall to do, put macro messaging over micro targeting, and I like what I know of his economic policy. I just don't know enough, and I think he could not only win, he could win in a landslide if he would stop his high school boy antics with women. Otherwise, he's going to force suburban women to Hillary. I think he can peel off some African Americans, some non-traditional millennial voters if he on the jobs message. I think he'd be great if he reins it in a little bit.
Just now, we got to go break real quick, but Mary, you re-registered as a libertarian when?
Today.
And why did you do that?
Because I'm a Republican in the Jeffersonian, Madisonian sense. I'm not a Republican for a party or a person, and the Libertarian Party continues to represent those constitutional principles that I agree with.
So you re-registered at least in part over the specter of the fact that Trump is now the presumptive nominee. The timing is not coincidental.
No, I did not.
The timing's not coincidental here, is it?
She's trying to steal the headlines away from Paul Ryan.
Is there no connection, in your view, between Trump being the presumptive nominee and you're leaving the Republican Party? No connection?
I'm not. Let me make this clear, Mark and my friends there. Yeah. I am never Hillary. I'm always Liberty. I, as you know, and I've said it publicly here in many places, after two successive blowout elections for conservatives with a non-response from Washington, a lot of conservatives are angry with the party. The party was falling apart. I can still vote for Republicans. I will never vote for Hillary. And never Trump means always Liberty.
But Mary, you've left the Republican Party.
I'm a provisional Trumpster. I don't know enough about Trump. I know like three things about his economic policy, and if we know everything we need to know about Hillary and her liberal policies.
If your husband left the Democratic Party, would you think that's a big story?
I think it would be a juicy story for me, and it would contribute mightily to marital tranquility, I'll say.
Okay.
I don't know if it's a story.
Okay. This, you know, a lot of people that don't know, a lot of people do, but I mean, a lot of people that don't know, I mean, there's been, you know, commentary on this issue for a long time. Mary Madeline was, you know, Bush. I mean, Republican for years and decades and Republican. She married to James Carville.
The Raging Cajun.
Which is freaking Clinton, Democrat Clinton, and they're both freaking just political operatives married in the same house, and I just, you know, ew. Yeah, I mean, if this is in Washington, and then she registers libertarian, I don't know if Carville registered libertarian, his head would explode, but, you know, or, you know, probably from a progressive bullet. But, they, you know, I am looking at Mary up there in the Libertarian convention that's going on this in the next week, which means I guarantee she registered. I guarantee she joined the party. I guarantee she's able to participate in the blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Judge Buttrick last night. He's going to the convention. And I kind of, I mean, it's open, but I'm just kind of, the door's closing on whether I go. I'm just like, nah, Adam's going to be speaking at it. Adam Kokesh, he's going to participate. And the discussion is minarchy versus anarchy. Mm-hmm. And his whole point was like, he was asking me whether he should do it. He goes, I don't know. Are we still having this debate? Is this, I mean, seriously, we're going to, you know, a little bit of sewage? I mean, you're kind of, and I'm going, well, that should be your position in the debate. And he goes, okay, I'll do it. So he's going to do that. In all of the national conventions, you see the same thing that you would see in the other conventions. And a lot of times, even more so and more blatant, because it's easier to get control. You'll have someone like Bob Barr would bring in 300-400 bust-in delegates for him to get the nomination. It still took 6 ballots and Wayne Allen Root and him coming together to make a deal in order for Barr to get the nomination. That's how difficult it was, but not impossible. And with the stakes that are going up now, I guarantee there is going to be a big giant floor. We got proxies up, everybody coming in our bus and guys of sitting with and doing. It's going to happen at the Libertarian National Convention. It's not going to go the way people think.
Well, they're already talking on Glenn Beck's show a couple days ago about these libertarian options. Matter of fact, on KFYI, which is the local political AM show here, that was the discussion. The drive home gentleman, he's kind of new, but he's part of the establishment, but he claims to be a libertarian background, so he tacks a little bit libertarian. He's the new guy who took over. Broomhead's spot. I forget his name.
Whatever.
But anyway, he claims to be more libertarian, and he's saying himself about the libertarians. He says, look, you know, the libertarians have these spots. What about, you know, is the Libertarian Party going to make a dent, or will they be used as basically a pressure valve for the Republican establishment? Mitt Romney's been toying with having a third party run. He's been trying to get some nominations or some names. And it sounds like after weeks of putting together a third party cabal that Mitt Romney is sort of about to give up. He's realizing they just can't find a person. Not to mention that there's a lot of third party restriction ballot access laws that some people, the Republican establishment, put in the way to keep his own people from having a third party, which I find deliciously ironic. But nevertheless, it sounds like they are about to give up on a third party run. But what's left is the libertarians. And this is, I think, an interesting battleground that's going to happen. You know, will the Libertarian Party stick to a philosophical libertarian position, which I completely respect? Or will we have more anti-establishment people like myself running, you know, using these positions to stick it to the establishment to hopefully open up more opportunities for the Libertarian Party? And or will we be co-opted even more so than Bob Barr and have the establishment come in? And you've got Mary Madeline, who is the top Republican. I mean, this is the significance of that clip, guys. Many of you don't understand. I mean, I had a lot of exclamation marks when I sent this to Ernie, that clip. This is someone who was the mouthpiece for the Bushes, the mouthpiece for the entire Republican establishment.
War!
Everything. And she's sitting here now after all these years saying, oh, well, I didn't leave the Republican Party. The Republican Party left me. I'm now a libertarian.
I've always been Jeffersonian.
I'll tell you what. I think I almost put my fist through my 4K television when I watched that. You know, I mean, it's nice. Welcome to the Libertarian Party. But you know what? You get in line, take a seat, and you learn from people like Adam Kokesh.
No. And they want to explain
you listen
it to us.
Them. Yeah. They want to explain to us using that party. So I hope the Libertarian Party, you know, stands up for those principles and keeps them out. I mean, I was, to be honest with you, I was the one area that I was a little trepidatious over was to make sure that I had enough support from libertarians who I understand are much more philosophical and committed to the, you know, absolutism of libertarian principles. I respect that.
Practical libertarian.
Yeah, a pragmatic libertarian is how I see myself. But nevertheless, I think it's important that the Libertarian Party vets and honors or at least respects the people they're putting forward with that. With that, I know that liberty, it's a continuum, but to have neocons and establishment types using this Libertarian Party against those that have kept this party alive with the torch of liberty is basically abhorrent.
Oh, no, 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 no. It's worse than that. There are people that never go away that are inside. I'm friends with them. I know who they are. I've been talking to them, you know, on a regular basis. I mean, we're going to be having the newspaper in all the convention bags. They're sending them out today. The problem is that they're so susceptible to somebody showing up with money. That's all it takes.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same.
Including Ernie Hancock.
There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
Yeah, when the man comes around.
The man is around right now.
Yeah, he's around. He's around. And, you know, it's I am of the opinion that there is a manifestation of some outrage and people understanding. And they finally got off their butts and started wanting to do something. And they're realizing, they go, while you were sleeping, we took over the entire mechanism for you even to have a say, and you don't get none, you'd too late.
Exactly, you while know? You're sleeping.
And they're going, mm-hmm. Are you freaking kidding me? It's this bad in detail.
Yeah.
And from every walk, you look at how bad Hillary is. And this whole thing is just amazing. Her husband, their administration, what she's done, people that have died, the legislation that they've done.
The Clinton Foundation.
Corruption, the foreign entanglement with mm-hmm. different governments and the sellout, the treasonous, whatever, the drug war of their kind of the money. It's just, and they are just, like, you're the one that always was hammering on how sociopathic she is.
Yeah.
And I'm going, there's a lot of evidence for this. So I'm them stealing this away. I would see a lot of Bernie Sanders people voting for Trump out of spite. But mm-hmm. it doesn't matter because they control. Here, the cover story on weekly newspapers popular with the left called the New Times. It's a weekly paper here. They do, I don't know, gazillions of half a million copies or some crap. And they say readers, which means, I don't know, they plan everybody reads, 14 people read it or something. But anyway, so they have it everywhere. You know, this is their weekly paper. It's turned into almost like a magazine, and in there, the cover story is all about the county recorder and how jacked up the presidential preference primary was, which is a big, giant ripoff anyway. Mm-hmm. But I'm going, yeah. And that's where the Democrats, they contact a couple nights ago. They really want me to run against, the county recorder again. I've done it in the past. They want me to do it again. And I go, first, I want to make sure all the congressional seats are filled up. We got you doing the U.S. Senate against McCain. We got some of the other U.S. Congress. I said, you make sure you get that all done because I want to make sure that's done. Maybe I'll do one of those. And then maybe I'll do the county recorder thing. But I don't think I know. From 20-something years of doing this, 25, whatever, it is so corrupt at so many levels. And in the 2004 campaign, when I ran for Secretary of State in 2006, I tell you what the issue was. It was competing election fraud. It was the Republicans kind of had the software, and the Democrats were just throwing in extra ballots. You know, so it was so bad, a competing fraud, that a state legislator named Jack Harper, he gets up and he says, "We're just going to do a Senate subpoena in my committee. We're going to count them by hand. I'm sick of it changing all the time. We're going to get the paper in here. We're going to count them. Boom, done. We'll be done this afternoon." Within hours, the FBI came, took all the ballots, never claimed a jurisdiction, and they just disappeared, and you never heard about it again. And I go on the ABC affiliate, and they brought in, "Bernie, what you?" I go, "Let me tell you what the deal. No claim of jurisdiction. They took all these ballots. Has nothing to do with the federal. This is a state thing, and they just disappeared them because." And I go, "And what are you going to do about it?" Well, they passed the, Karen Johnson sponsored it, and they had a bunch of the activists help write it, the manual validation thing. You manually validate for accuracy. Well, it went down from 10 down to just 2%. You throw dartboards and you pick a precinct and you kind of, you know, we count that one. When they did that, they put them in part of the legislation that Harper had, an amendment to it, is all the ballots had to be under 24/7 video surveillance at the Maricopa County Elections Department, where they put them in the vault there. It's on surveillance, and they disappeared. They're all gone. Well, we found them. They were in Sheriff Joe Arpaio's training facility. Oh, really? Well, we just needed more room, and we wanted to check whether we just cause. Arpaio. And we sued. The Libertarian Party sued. We went to court and all that. And the final judgment, nothing about we were wrong. It's just, we got to certify and it's too late and it doesn't matter and, you know, in peace. Really. This is how I know. I don't think I know. I have checked off every freaking box of every opportunity to do it. I've had media go into logic and accuracy tests. We did a freedom of information request on manpower just to even see if it was physically time, physic possible for them to check all the signatures on the early balloting. No, they just go right past that thing and put them in. The early balloting that they send to them, they have them at the post office. They send a guy with a van to go get them. Why don't you just deliver them? Nope, got to have a guy in a van by himself. Go out. You go get him. Don't worry about it. You know, I'm going, holy crap. So all of this awakening that people, what they're starting to find out, what happened with Kentucky with Hillary and Bernie and all this stuff, everybody's starting to get religion now. They're going, this whole thing is, yes, it is. And what's it going to come down to? What Dr. Paul was always saying and all the criticism that they gave of him, they didn't understand because he knew it was always going to be economics. All this other stuff just doesn't matter. And at the meeting last night, when they did the Constitution thing and everything, Keith was one of the only guys that threw the monkey wrench in the whole thing, and they didn't pick up on it. They didn't get it. What was the question, the comment that you made, Keith?
Well, in regards to last night's
discussion group,
you know, I liked where the gent was coming from. I thought he had a good way of grouping 38 states together.
But you have to explain what it was about.
You explain it, Frank. You do better.
Well, this is, we probably should save some of this for the next hour, but basically it's the, this discussion group was talking about the debt, and the gentleman has a organization which is the Compact for America rather than the Contract for America.
We're on America.
And And in essence, it's a way, it's kind of a little convoluted, but it's using the system, which is what Ernie was, you know, gnashing his teeth and bloody lip last night, you know, biting his lip the whole time, which is using the system to say, look, how do we stop the debt problem? Well, we know that that's not going to be corrected the way it is now. So let's look at a sunset law that's going to come up in 2021. I think it was a 2020 or whatever, 2021. And therefore, let's see if we can have put a law in that says that if we do not have a balanced budget by that time, then we can have this constitutional convention, right, and have everyone together. The problem is that when we've tried to do this before, you know, the government just doesn't care. Matter of fact, I was part of that constitutional convention that we had a few years ago. It was like 10 years ago, 8 years ago. With Ed, you know, was part of it and the whole gang. And I actually delivered a copy to John McCain's office, strangely enough. But when you do that, you know, they don't acknowledge what we do. So this Compact with America was, in essence, from what I understand, is saying, look, they're not going to acknowledge us unless the government themselves acknowledge that that a new voice of a Continental Congress can come together. So therefore the trigger will be that if we don't have a balanced budget by that time, by 2021, then everything goes into effect and we need at least 38 states to authorize this to go.
It's kind of a constitutional convention, a little bit of Article 5 with the application of wording of it doesn't matter. So the point that Keith was making...
Yes, basically what I made is that all this debt doesn't mean a hill of beans because it's all backed by...
The petrodollar.
The petrodollar. And if the petrodollar fails, I can care less what numbers you have on there. I can care less what agreements you make. That paper becomes wallpaper.
So this is, and Keith brings out, he goes, yeah, but what about when the petrodollar fails?
You know? I did it out of the blue. What,
and then, of course, Gary's sitting right next to me. He goes, yeah, you don't have till 21. You know, so everything he says, he's talking to these Austrian economists and libertarians, and anybody just knows, going, well, I guess the only point, he's going to come on the show next week. We'll get him on. But the only thing is, and I've talked to him about this before, is that it's good PR. It's good, you know, holding their feet up. It's good for the discussion. It's good for the education. That's the only thing I can get out of it. Of one more thing that won't work. Okay, yeah. So I let him have his say. Do it. I like Nick. We get along fine. And he made a lot of references, you know, to me, you know, because we had talked about this. And the first thing he started off with was children enslaved. And because my first thing is, I go, do my children owe the debt that we have now? If that's not, you know, wiped off or repudiated, or you just do what Trump says and you just, you know, mint up 15 gazillion, you know, $1 trillion coins and just pay off to somebody and the Chinese can have whatever and hyperinflate something, it doesn't matter to me. I don't care. So it's, we're going to have a good time when he comes on. This, and I think Keith really just nailed just by asking that point. Everybody just kind of, yeah, I guess it really just doesn't matter. Who's saying this?
Well, I have a whole section of the petrodollar that I want to talk about. Well, I guess we'll talk about it after the break. And I want to explore that with Keith because that was the whole key part, strangely enough, of Trump and the petrodollar. And he happened to mention it. So we'll get into this in depth after the hour with a lot of the Trump information I have for you on hour 3 of the Trump Report. Yeah.